Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Okay, welcome back everyone. It's our custom to go around the room and say our names, but first let's just hear from anyone that's new or returning from a long absence.
Hi, Jamie.
Jamie, welcome.
I'm Jeff.
Jeff, welcome.
Yes.
Anybody online? Jeff?
Yeah, from Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado, cool, thank you for zooming in. Anybody else new online?
Oh, hi. How long is a long answer?
Just say
Gary, who doesn't know whether it's been long or short?
Okay, hi Gary, welcome back. Okay, I'm Grisha.
Alex.
Luis.
Gary.
George.
Jeff.
Stephen.
Ben.
Jeff.
Andy.
George.
Bob.
I'm Brad.
I'm Travis.
Susan.
I'm Richard.
Jack.
My name's Cass.
I'm Tony.
Jim.
Marcus. Cool. And now I'll welcome our teacher for today, Melvin Escobar. Melvin is a core teacher at the East Bay Meditation Center. He's a licensed psychotherapist and a certified yoga instructor. Melvin has walked the path of service for much of his life, drawing in his experiences as a queer man of color, born and raised in Los Angeles, California. Having encountered the priceless wisdom embodied in Buddhism and yoga, he continues daily to learn the revolutionary potential of body-centered contemplative practices for personal and social healing. You can read his latest article in Lion's Roar magazine, Loving Kindness, May All Beings Be Happy, and visit his website, melvinescobar.com, for more information. I posted that information in the chat, and then give me a second to switch the camera and turn over the microphone to Melvin.
So we have until 11:50. All right. You can include question and answers with that.
Cool. Can everybody online hear okay?
All right. And just so you know, online, you're in this direction where I'm waving, so I can see you on the screen. I need, like, binoculars to see you a little bigger, but I can see there. I can see names better. Welcome, welcome. And welcome everyone in here. Yeah, and I hope you were able to feel a kind of a connection between... it's trippy, the whole Star Trek, like, beam me up, right? We were able to do that. And it's still, Grisha and I were talking at the beginning how it's sort of like this development, this evolution of our capacity. And yet, it's like an ancient technology. Many of you are familiar with the three marks of existence in Buddhism. And there's so many lists, and I'm going to pick a... different lists around just the interconnection, yeah, that there is a connection, and it's more manifest through this technology. And this feels like it feels to me like a celebration, because I imagine this is the most of us that have been together. First of all, it's like a unique configuration, so every moment is a celebration, but I just feel the energy of and the preciousness of being able to be here. Yeah, so I just wanna acknowledge that. And as I do, it brings up the one of these three marks of existence of the impermanence, that this is like a temporary situation. Yeah, that we'll all go back to our kind of habits and lives, and so, but something else to celebrate is that once we get connected to these teachings, we can always come back to them, like no matter what. So I came today with, and this happens all the time in my years of teaching, that I have all these notes and then I'm like, away with them. but I still come back. So one of the things I'm coming to you with today, Jeff had pointed out these beads, and they came from a dear teacher of mine named Donald Marks, and he was a dear friend who, I'm just going to say the story, who I met on Craigslist, remember those days? And this is a rare opportunity to, because we are in, we're all gay men or allies, yeah? And, you know, we met, this is going to be public and all these things, but who cares, yeah? We met on Craigslist for like men massaging men, kind of. So it was like an extension of the Body Electric, and so this was almost 20 years ago now. And so I learned that he was a Mahayana Zen lay practitioner, and I went to him and said, you know, I really want to learn how to balance or integrate sexuality with spirituality. And I feel it more in my body that there is no separation. But there was a sense of him not knowing either, and just being overwhelmed by the sexual energy of being alive, right? Of being with someone in an intimate way, yeah. And intimate in that there's always intimacy, but with touch, you know. And so as I started the meditation, I've been inviting that every time I teach, it's like to sense into the body, like the physical. Like this vessel, the only way we experience spirituality in whatever way we can put words to it, right? And so, and this connects like to the theme was Jeff asked me to talk about Buddhism, spiritual practices, and authenticity, yeah? And that word connected me to a Zen teaching around, like, what's your original face? It's the koan, yeah? And koan is like a technique that is used. It's sort of like a riddle or like a imponderable, or you can ponder it, but there isn't really an answer. And it usually, when you have an answer, it points to the duality stuff, like it's either this or that, and how we want a simple answer when these things are complicated, yeah. And, so when I think of original face, there's another koan that's related to that, and today's like Mother's Day, yeah. Here in the U.S. and other places, and the other koan is like, what was the original face? Your original face before your parents were born. So I'm just going to pause there, just to see what. So original face, just notice whatever arises of physical sensation, thought, feeling. Just 30 seconds. Any of those words that go on. And if there's like popcorn, just a couple words, if people want to just say whatever came up, no right or wrong.
I was a Buddha. No verse.
Could you say that again, Jeff?
No face.
No face.
Faceless. Listening.
Light.
Light.
Intensity.
Blissful.
So let's just stay with that for a moment. If there's other words that want to come up, but those are beautiful words. And yeah, so much, I think, a central part of these teachings is that we are Buddha. Yeah, we are this Buddha nature. One of my other living mentors is a gentleman named Mitch Hall, and he's in his early 80s, and he sent me I haven't talked to him in a while, and he emailed me a list of Zen precepts from Vermont. That's where he grew up. And he talked about, they talk about this monastery there, the Three Gems, which is Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And then this was the first time I read these interpretations of the three jewels. So the Buddha, the oneness of life. Dharma, the diversity of life. And Sangha, where oneness and diversity come together in harmony. And harmony is an interesting thing. You know, it's how many folks felt annoyed with all the sounds that were going on during the meditation. Wow, okay. This one. I heard the sound. I think there was a delivery person, and I had this aversion of like, why are people working on Sunday, you know? And then there was an opportunity to like practice like loving kindness toward that person and the person receiving the package, and so the harmony and like the disharmony, like the that actually hearing sounds. And their version, because I've been practicing a while, and some of you have been practicing more than I have, apparently, because we didn't feel interrupted by it, but the sense of like, oh, this is, as someone mentioned earlier, a mindfulness bell, like an opportunity to touch into the fullness of what's happening, the authentic, yeah. Yeah, and the term authentic is always something I have aversion toward as well, the pushing away, because it felt like I, as a gay person and queer person, that I would never be authentic, that there was something that I would never fit into. Yeah, that. And this sense of like being born wrong, you know. And I've noticed that through the practice that's helped me create space for those feelings, yeah, and for the ways that I might feel like I don't fit in. So I'm going to be vulnerable and actually talk to you about like my face here, since we can, those of you who are able to see, yeah, I don't know everyone's conditions, but that we can see a face, and I have a autobiographical story from I won't go too far, I'll just go back to April of 2021 and tell you that I met my biological father for the first time. And if you're wondering what he looks like, I'm like a carbon copy. So I went through my whole life feeling different from the sexuality stuff, and being a boy who like has feelings and wants to have feelings, and then not looking like anyone from my family. And my family, the family I grew up with, so it's my maternal side, is from El Salvador, from Central America. And this father of mine, I had always seen his name on my birth certificate, but he left, like many men have done in history. But he was born in Iran. And so his people are Assyrian. So it's Assyrian. And there's this ancient culture in northern Iran, Iraq, Syria, eastern Turkey, so Mesopotamia, that whole area. And I say that to say in that when I think of original face, I can't help but think of the kind of pottery, the clay of like how we're each like molded, by the ancestors. And there's so many definitions of ancestors. I know for many U.S.-born Americans, there's a kind of complicated history with recent ancestors. Yet, that is like kind of the phenotype, the like physical aspect of it. But it's so, a lot of the words you all use were sort of these kind of abstractions, right? They were more like the beyond the self, which is another of the three marks of existence, is that there isn't an essential self, yet that all our experiences have shaped who we are, in this life, and yet I looked like my dad, I ended up meeting other family members. I have a sister now. She's very cool. She's 30, millennial. She's really, really, like, cool. And I have some cousins I've met now. Nibbling's 4-year-old twin. That's a gender neutral term for nephew and niece. And to see this sort of like face of these moldings that have come through time. And totally blew my mind emoji thing, where I had this perception of who I am, what I look like, what my real authentic self is. And that really got me to really think about like how conditioned and limited it is, the way I see myself, but then also to think about how the way people see me also shapes my face. And there's grief with that, actually, because I think especially as, and I stammer when I use the word queer, because I'm looking at the generations that are in here that we're part of. I was on that cusp where that word was like not cool, And now I love it. I love the concept of like queering, of really, But feeling different and being seen as such, and the kind of contortions that I had to put myself into to survive, I think I speak for a lot of us, right? That we have to like contort our face, right, to be able to be more palatable to and for survival, right? And if I have grief around that, like at very young, that we have to do that, I could even feel it in my throat right now, how the kind of talking more gutturally or more like with a deeper sound and any high pitches or sibilant, my S's, you know, trailing off too long. But thinking of how all those things have shaped me, you know. And the thing I love about practice, and so whatever that means to you, yeah, to me right now, I want to soak it in that it means relationality, like that each of you are, I feel like the attention and the, and I'll just speak for myself, like the longing for being seen, you know, and how that sense of being seen is absent of like the vitriolic like judgment that we've been trained to have toward who we perceive or what we perceive as other, you know. So I'll ask this question, like, what's your original face? And then just noticing what happens. The juicier parts for me is when those wounds come up, you know. And if I'm able to notice the wound trauma, the shame or whatever, that I can embrace it and see it as another form of like impermanence and no self and the number one, the marked existence out of the three is the unsatisfactoriness, the dukkha. The Leonard Cohen had a poem line. It's in any way you turn, it's going to hurt. In the sense of like that. No matter what contortions and gymnastics, especially mental gymnastics, that if I can be with the pain, especially like something like trauma, and what makes something, in my opinion, traumatic is when we feel alone, right? That it's like only happened to me, and that it's my fault, you know, that. And that the sense of this is all of who I am, there isn't, you know, that I'm like damaged because of it. So speaking of the mental gymnastics, I'm going to read an old, just short poem from Dogen. He was a 13th century Japanese Zen teacher, priest, poet, writer, and he implores us, it feels like, when he says cease practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, learn the backward step that turns your light inward to illuminate within. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will be manifest. And as I read this, the word illuminate, that's been a word, it's beautiful. And it's also pointed in I started reading about Buddhism, about 30 years ago in a book when I was a teenager. And this, in my opinion, like an obsession with enlightenment, you know, sort of like. And so when I read this poem and I think of a word that I heard recently, there's a great thinker that I encourage folks to look up, this guy Bayo, B-A-Y-O Okomolafe, A-K-O-M-O-L-A-F-E. He's from Nigeria, I think, originally, and he said the word endarkenment. Yeah. So when we're turning the light inward to illuminate within, it's like, what are we illuminating, you know? And I've noticed in my interpretation of obsession around enlightenment, it's sort of like, if it's everything's so bright, then I won't have to look at the pain of life, the pain of, you know, these marks of existence, the changing body, the mind that is feeble, in a word. And so I've been thinking about Darkman and thinking of my family members mostly are like lighter skinned than I am, and I would think of my skin as just like sort of dirty or something, because I was, and that's part of the colonial kind of project in terms of you know, colonialism, imperialism, right? And I can't help to, this is like my socio-political commentary for today, the how enlightenment is like at the very heart of it a colonial project, right? This sort of you're less than human. We're gonna go and tell you that through religion, and then divide and conquer you. And even if you're not from some of these countries, we can easily relate it to how we were taught from very young to like cut off our sexuality, right? To be told that we're not spiritual, to actually, you know, under Christian dominance, right? To be told we're evil and all these things. And so the word enlightenment now has become to me like a softer light. Like, how could I shine the light just in a softer way, and then like turn off the light in a way. In Buddhism, there's wholesome, but in ways that really, with like a really strong, like I feel it in my gut, and like ethical obligation to myself to like reduce harm, yeah, for like to not to like to cause the least harm possible in an experience where I, as I've been pointing out, being taught that I am not good at love or less than or not fully human, all these part of, in one way to say it, I mean, these are all the isms, right? The colonial project, or the racism, sexism, all the isms, you know, and how to have like a soft light in my body, you know. And as I, in this moment, I'm even scanning my body and feeling it in the soles of my feet, and to really balance out and to make space for like all the amazing things that happen in darkness, yeah. And another ism is kind of like exceptionalism, and I'm wary of saying these are really like dark times, you know. And I could say that if there were any person identified as black, that might be like a really offensive kind of term, and I've been called out on that. And yet there's also a way we can see how maybe these are, the word that gets thrown around kind of facetiously is like apocalyptic times, right? And the Greek term and etymology for that is like uncovering. So that we're uncovering what is in the dark, you know, in the shadows. And for me, it's been a lot of, and I think, just grief upon grief. As I was preparing last night for coming today, I went and started Googling an old, my fifth grade teacher, actually, who passed in 94 for me. And started to uncover that whole grief of, and not, it's not the whole thing because it's so much, right? And in coming together here, I realized that it's so necessary when unpacking these kind of big griefs to do so in community. That's how it's been done for a long time amongst humans, and that it feels taboo to even say the word grief, and but that's become a part of like this original face of like the losses and how grief. I'm like grateful that I recognize that it is a process of dealing with loss or loss is kind of like dualistic, like it's either, you know, but birth and death are always happening, but that the coping with loss, like actually practicing in every moment with the changes that are happening. Because if I don't, one of the things I end up doing is looking for permanence in things, yeah, in lovers and in experiences and in my routines and it actually helps me to slow down and like really feel love, right? This grief has become a mindfulness bell of like, oh wow, I'm still loving, you know. And this capital L love, this the Greeks have like 8 different words for love. Metta is kind of a word for love. It is translated like that. But metta, M-E-T-T-A, one of my favorite translations is like universal goodwill, yeah, or agape, or Greek. But, and then the lowercase L, and there's no right or wrong in the practice, right? It's all part of the practice. But that feels like the more like attached sort of, if you're just this way, or if I'm just this way, then when I'm easy to love or whatever, that I've really committed to doing the capital L love, and people annoy the heck out of me, or you know, there's a lot of suffering in a person that's coming up to me and asking for stuff, money, and weed was the most recent, and how can I be present with that, and yet there's the and protect my grief around it, because grief comes up in that situation when there is enough to go around, right? There's an abundance, and that in that moment I want to like express grief to this person, and they're obviously not available for that. And so it's like a protection, and coming back to this other point of the, it's too big for like one or two people to hold, yeah. That it's these collective traumas of these pandemics that we've all have survived thus far, yeah, the multiple pandemics. That these they're collective traumas, and they need collective healing, and you know, as a therapist, I see mainly people one-on-one. So this is something I keep on, and it's part of my training as a social worker to see the systemic issues. Because coming back to this Dogen thing, it's like ceasing practice on this intellectual understanding. And well, there's so much more going on. You know. One of the daily readings I have, it's a free email list by a Burmese monk named Sayadaw Tedjanaya, T-E-J-A-N-Y-A. And he has all these pith instructions. And so whether you're standing, sitting, lying down, or walking, if you remember to be aware, you are meditating. You are cultivating the wholesome quality of mind. And wholesome, you know, has a word I always think of, like, you know, Wonder Bread or something, and now we're whatever. But like, wholesome is like, to me, it's like whole, like it's like the wholeness, you know. And I'm grateful that I can be in Sangha, that it seeing each of you taps into this like kind of fearlessness or courage to be like, okay, like there are other people that are willing to face. Again, not in the enlightenment, like blinding floodlights of things, but that happens, right? But that again, it's like kind of soft light, being able to be kind with each other and reflect, like when the disharmonies happen, when the conflicts happen, So I'm just going to end with just one more, the part two of the one I just read. So this daily email, it was two parts, and then I'll turn it over to opening. I would be remiss if every time I've been here, I've done a Joni Mitchell quote. So that's how I'll end. So Shadows and Light album title track. Every picture has its shadows and it has some source of light. Blindness in sight. That's what I'll leave us with. So thank you for your practice. Now I'll open it up. And Grisha, the technology part of it, will this pick up from over there?
Yeah, people speak up.
Okay, and then I'll repeat, like, I'll paraphrase, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you because of your speech of self-revelation spoke so much of what I'm working through now. I don't really have a question. Other than the oddity of the ritual face or enlightenment or light, sometimes in your description it felt like that it was like a little refrigerator light, you know, that, okay, it's on. It's on. We have to go in and see if it's on. It closes. Ooh, and darkening. So it's also like a consciousness of and play, I guess, of witnessing what my experience is in each change, in each door I open, and each space I enter. So, I don't know. You know, that's why I chose. That's what arose when you asked about a word, and I said listening. Because that's basically, I mean, whether I'm a waitress and I'm listening, but I'm also waiting to the next moment and where I am in that next moment. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. If I may, you brought out one of my favorite Zen teachings, is don't know mind. So you said, I don't know. You know, it's like that's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you for a wonderful talk. I really felt your heart. And I too have met my biological maternal side a year ago, and it's amazing to see sort of another, you know, variation on the tree, so to speak. I have a pretty cool sister too, so yeah. One of the things that I really liked about what you talked about, I don't have really a question either, but I appreciated your talk about grief. I was just thinking this morning about someone who just lost their mother recently, and Rumi's quote, "Grief is the garden of compassion." You really tie those together, how it keeps us semi-raw, but present all the time. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So semi-raw and present all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could have gone into a whole talk about mothers. That would have been a thing. And one of the things I grieve is like the not being fully seen, like still wanting that. And how do I kind of do that for myself, quote unquote, but also nurture that within communities, and how do we reparent ourselves? You know, this question, the koan again, of like, what was your original, the face of your parents, and then that helped me kind of expand, like how much gets projected onto them, and this compassion for their suffering, you know.
Yeah, I'd like to also just thank you for this thought about faces, original face, and just faces in general. I'm thinking about especially what you said about when you meet someone on the street who's really suffering, you know, like they're unhoused, they're maybe on drugs, having a psychotic episode, and like my heart inside is so hurt for them, and gosh, how I wish I could help them, but then my face says, do not engage because it's, you know, maybe quote dangerous or something. And the grief in that like this world is parts of this world are so trash, you know, and we have billion billionaires. And then we have people living like that. There's not enough. Yeah. I don't know but then the face comes up automatically. And so I'm just going to be thinking about that this week. And I actually have a student who's really suffering and, you know, very dysregulated a lot of the time. And it's that same kind of grief. Like, I can't reach this child because their brain is, has been hijacked and experiences everything as a threat, like a really like we would experience an axe murderer after us in a dark hallway, you know, like that's the smallest thing. So.
Right. Yeah. 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 Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's where it comes back to this kind of collective grief, to just grieve, like, you know, for so many things, right? That, especially with children, to try to protect them. And we can't fully protect them or fully protect anyone from the dukkhas, yeah. But in that moment, Gracia, I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I could just like let out the tears. I was really grateful. I have a queer men of color group, a deep refuge group. We meet once a month. That we have been for like 12, 13 years. And we had like our last three meetings were all about grief. Like we just kind of been working it. And to just share a little bit about it. There hasn't been many tears, actually. I was the one like really bawling last time. I think I was in my own thing and I was receiving support. And there's all these ways to grieve, you know, that it doesn't have to look a certain way. It's very like idiosyncratic. Like you do it and again, this sort of balance of like, that means I love, right? So that means you love this kid, right? When you're feeling what they're going through, or and then putting the poker face or the kind of that shield, right? That's a love for yourself because that pain is too much, right? And so the second political statement is like when we start to blame individuals like myself for the systemic issues, that's another kind of divide and conquer sort of strategy. And that's just the way the mind works. We have to compartmentalize. It's really amazing to be able to do that. And there's a grief of like, I want to be able to feel my feelings, you know, like I want to be able to just cry with this kid or you know, or however other ways we metabolize, yeah, the grief. You know. Yeah. So I believe we're at the time for now, yeah. And so I really, again, thank you and for your attention, and yeah, that's a celebration that we have access to these teachings. Yeah. So
thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And it's time for announcements. Maybe we'll hear from today's host. Thank you.
Go ahead. Yes, I'm the host today. So stay and enjoy the fellowship with Sangha. We have a bunch of vegan treats to share. And there's hot water for tea. If you have tea, leave your cup in the sink, and I'll take care of that at the end of the meeting. I'll be coming around with a Donna bowl. Your generosity helps keep us meeting our expenses, which include the rent for this wonderful space, keeping on Zoom, and the Donna to our speakers, and also it pays for the newsletter, which goes out quarterly to people who are mostly incarcerated. And it's a really great opportunity for us to be of service to that community. Some people gather around 12:30 at the front door to go out to lunch. Anybody's welcome to join them. And the only other thing that I would say is we could really use another one or two people to help with the Zoom setup in the morning. It's not a lot of work, but it's really vital to keep us online. With vacations coming up, we're going to be shorthanded, so anybody who could lend a hand that way, it would be a great way to be of service to the Sangha.
Richard? So I just want to let everyone know we're having our annual retreat again after a long absence at the Land of Medicine Buddha, October 20th through 22nd. Donald Rothberg is going to be our teacher. I posted on the Google group two links to his website at the Land of Medicine Buddha. It's a stunning place. It's just really lovely. More details will be forthcoming, but save the date, October 20th through 22nd. Thank you.
On that note, I wanted to also, for those who weren't here last week, I want to announce that I'm going to be co-leading a trip to southern India for 14 days of intense mantra practice. If you have any interest, it's very reasonable, and it's a great ashram. So, there's pamphlets on the table.
I also should have mentioned that for people who are new and would like to be added to our directory, there's a sign-up sheet on the credentials. So.
And link on the website, too, where you can sign up.
Yes. Yeah, I just want to make a distinction between there's the directory, which is the database, and the Google group. They're two different things. The announcements come out of the Google group. But we don't send out much to the database. in case you want to be, get the announcements.
Okay. Any other announcements? Okay. Next week we have open small group discussions. No teacher next week, so we'll come back and for those of you who are new, we divide into small groups and we have a topic and we just chat and get to know each other. And people on Zoom, you'll go into breakout rooms as well. So join us again next week. Nice to have new folks here.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I want to come. Yeah, and I invite you to East Bay Meditation Center. So it's that open. Next month we're going to start to reopen in person. Tuesday nights we have our alphabet sangha, so LGBTQIQSGL plus. So we just say alphabet. So that happens every Tuesday night, and there's people of color night on Thursday, and other classes and offerings. Yep.
Cool. All right, we'll gather for merit. Do you have dedication merit, or would you like us to use our...
I love your alls, okay. Yeah.
All right, gather over. By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness which is without sorrow. And may all live in equanimity without too much attachment or too much aversion, believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.